Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, 7th of October. Joining us this morning, you can take the mask off in here. We're okay.
I'm just trying to be a team player.
Yeah. I'm more curious about your Band-Aids and the it doesn't look like Squidward, but it could be.
Well, I have five children, and a couple of them are in the very young, so colorful bandages are kind of par for the course in my home.
So those are just colors. Those aren't creatures or new cartoon characters.
No, there's an eyeball on this one, so it's related to some creature.
Okay. Morning, everybody. Steve Watson is with us this morning, Eureka Police Chief, and his Band-Aids. Winston, why do we say it?
How did the landlubber get that name?
Well, you look to me to magically know the origin of this.
Yeah, you've been in school more recently than I.
I don't recall the lubbers being discussed.
I would guess it's probably a mutation off of lover.
Like a land lover?
Somebody who didn't want to sail or was really excited about finding land after sailing. How's that?
It is not, as so many suppose, from the word lover, but from the Danish lobs, I think that's how it's pronounced, or the Danish word meaning a clown or bumpkin. So the term means any person who lives on land and acts inexperienced or awkward aboard a ship.
Oh, you were close, though, real close.
Oh, yeah. First thing out of the chute. Many are wrong when they think, yeah, okay. Oh, my. So what's going on out there? You had any activities of note?
Oh, we had another fatal vehicle versus bicyclist collision a few days ago. Appears that the bicyclist swerved out into traffic for unknown reasons, still under investigation, and was struck by a truck with someone driving southbound on Broadway. And so,
Broadway Sprint. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, didn't survive. So, we're still investigating that. This is one of those things. It doesn't appear like the driver was speeding or under the influence, from what we can tell right now. So, we're trying to investigate why that the bicyclist.
Can you say the same about the bicyclist?
Well, we'll find out when we get the tox results back.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. I still am in favor of those dividers down the middle of the road, and I know it would be problematic for you guys and for Sean's folks also. But holy Toledo. I mean, it's happening all over the place, and then it becomes the expectation that that's okay for others. And, yeah, it's not really what should be happening across a U.S. highway, I guess, is the simplest way that I can think of it.
Yeah, I know that they're taking a look at possibly realigning the 101 corridor in the city, and there may be some changes as part of that if it takes place that may be more pedestrian safe and friendly in some cases. And certainly that's something worth looking at anytime you construct new roadways these days.
Well, and even Billy last Thursday had a couple of, I don't know what you call them, strange walkers, I guess, on Harrison, middle of the day, decided that they kind of like wanted to walk where a car was driving by. And take three or four steps as they're yelling at the sidewalk, and then they come back in. Yeah, when you guys see that, just driving around, do you stop and talk, or can you, legally, can you engage folks like that and find out, you know, is it a bad drug reaction? Is it a lack of drug reaction? You know, whatever it is, it's got them talking to somebody in somewhere.
Yeah, certainly they'd be violating the vehicle code as a pedestrian in the roadway. And so we have the authority to stop and talk to them. And
now that would be a fun one to try to explain to somebody who's in that dimension.
Right. Well, but you make a good point, because in many cases you've either got they're under an influence of alcohol or drugs, or they're experiencing some kind of mental health problem, and oftentimes both as co-occurring disorders. And that certainly poses challenges and probably accounts for at least some of our vehicle versus pedestrian accidents that we have. You have pedestrians run out in the roadway where they shouldn't be. You also sometimes have drivers that are driving faster than they should be or not paying attention, and those are all issues.
Where was the head? Oh, that was CHP's jurisdiction. Sorry, I was going to ask you something you probably don't know anything about. Yet again.
Well, that's a pretty long list, actually, truth be told.
Are you seeing kind of the traffic patterns beginning to return a little bit towards what we might consider or use the term normal?
I certainly remember the early days and weeks of the shelter-in-place orders where it certainly felt almost surreal, ghost town. My sense is our traffic patterns are back to near what they were. At least it certainly seems like it.
Or at least maybe during the commute hours there seems to be enough activity. It may not last quite as long,
right?
But it seems like it's there.
You know, they track some of that data on 101 in the city.
The traffic,
the passing. Yeah, I'm sure they could actually pull that data and tell you exactly where we're looking, which is an interesting. I'd like to see that myself.
Yeah, I saw one study. It was back when Dan Moody was involved, and it was it was more than interesting because obviously we'd seen the little wires running across, but hadn't. Hour by hour, intersection by intersection, or location by location, you really get a sense of what's going on in the city, other than the 4th and 5th Street.
Right.
Thanks. Going to play that game on me now, huh? Do you guys use that as far as either ways to get from A to B or areas to avoid?
Yeah, you know, the traffic pattern studies are crucial for a whole number of things. And our traffic engineering department with Scott Elsmore relies on a lot of that data as well as our collision data. And, you know, the interesting thing about collisions is the reporting methods can play a big factor into what your statistics are for collisions. So many agencies won't take a formal traffic collision report for a non-injury traffic collision, provided everyone has a license and insurance, because so really it's a civil issue.
So you get a fender bender and it doesn't register?
It may not be reported in the systems as a traffic collision, at least unless you look deeper into where it is reported, like in the computer aided dispatch system. Well, serious accidents are always going to get a full investigation and report.
No, I was thinking, the yield signs and stop signs, where those are put in and whatnot. Because I know a lot of that's predicated off of numbers of connections.
Well, and I believe there's funding tied to these kind of rates as well, which is another factor to consider. But looking at how fast people are driving, how much vehicular traffic's on the road, the accident rates, and a number of other factors are all important pieces of data for informing these kind of decisions.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Steve, some of the dialogue that's going on at the federal level has got to be intriguing, interesting, comical, concerning, panic-filled.
All of the above.
Yeah. For you, and other chiefs, how do you separate or filter or figure out which ones are more viable that maybe you want to kind of start thinking about? Or if you're already doing it, dismiss it and go, okay, good, we've got that one taken care of. We don't have to worry if that thing becomes formal.
Certainly, anytime you try to make public safety a political thing, that creates concerns. And there is a tendency in this country, I think now more than ever, to do extreme swings and overreactions to things. And you hope that with time, people calm down, common sense starts to come back in, and then you start looking at realistic solutions.
But the electeds are the ones that are, I mean, I can't imagine being in Minneapolis when they started doing the whole defunding thing, and then things turn sideways, and then they come and they attack the cops for not providing enough protection. So
yeah,
wait a minute.
That's insanity. It's happening in Seattle to a certain extent, too.
Yeah. I mean, so when you see that kind of stuff, and I know Eureka doesn't tend to be out in front, but we tend to be really close to the head of the class on some of this stuff. Are you getting any whispers along those lines here?
Well, there were initial flurries of emails and calls to elected officials at first. Many of them form letters that were created somewhere, but also a lot of input and calls from regular citizens that were very concerned. The last thing you want to do is lose the progress that's been made, and not have enough deputies and officers out there to keep their communities safe. One of the things that I was very proud of is looking at some of the calls to reform policing. And, you need body-worn cameras, you need this, you need that. We are already doing so many of those things, a lot that the community can be very proud of, very progressive, forward-thinking, and even the state. California certainly is known for passing some stupid laws, but there were some changes made that have already been implemented that, including changes to the use of force laws in the state. Started out on the extreme side, really not feasible, would make us less safe, but working with some of the law enforcement groups and the elected officials, we were able to come up with some changes that were workable. They were ultimately ones we could all live with, and even in many cases, some good changes. And that put us ahead of much of the country in this area.
So some of it's confirmation that you're on the right trail, or at least you don't have those concerns. What about the others? Are some of the suggestions being made just so far out that either small towns can't do it because there's just not enough money to do it, or it would triple you? Or they're just so outlandish that you don't have to worry about them.
It's insane, some of the suggestions out there. There's a city in California, I think it's Berkeley, that was proposing to basically, as I understood it, prevent officers from being involved in traffic stops. Like, let's say you see someone speeding, reckless, whatever, and creating this non-sworn, unarmed group of basically code enforcement type people that would handle those traffic safety issues. So why is someone even going to stop?
They must not have drugs in Berkeley or any kidnapping.
Yeah, or armed felons, yeah. or someone high on methamphetamine that's going to pound your face into the ground as soon as you walk up to their door. That kind of insanity is not being thought through. Looking at ways, hey, have we overextended the police? Are they policing too many gaps on a broken system like mental health and homelessness? Yes, we are. But that doesn't mean the answer is strip away all your funding and all your officers. There's plenty of work not even dealing with those issues to the same extent to be done. But can we begin to put some resources where they're like in our mental health system, where it's truly needed, and get some, licensed mental health workers out there in the field dealing with some of these nonviolent situations where you really don't need a police officer, or at the very least co-responding to a greater extent, kind of like what we do with the MIST program, but expanding. Yes, if done right, those can be good things that I think law enforcement would very much support, because we don't want to have to police the homeless.
But you want staff to be able to do that from the mental health side, and my understanding is they're not enough now to fill the current positions, let alone expand the number that would be necessary to be able to meet you guys in the field.
Very true, and the mental health facilities are inadequate, and the list goes on and on. And there's other complications with the bureaucracy that gets involved in some other systems. Law enforcement, just by nature of what we do, we just tend to get it done. And, you can't afford sometimes for all these other processes and systems that are required in some other fields. Because things are happening at the speed of light right now on the street. You've got to make a call. You've got to take an action. And so we find ways, even though we may not be trained or equipped to do a certain task, to get it done.
Do you have ratios, X number of calls per officer, that is the ideal reference? Running with some efficiencies, obviously being effective, but having a little bit of wiggle room to handle those peaks that might come in. Is there a reference point that you can then look at and then figure out how many officers you're supposed to have on your staff?
In a kind of a general sense, yes. And we've had officers handle as many as 30 calls in a 10-hour shift. And that 10-hour shift isn't just all out in the field. You've still got a brief. You got to prepare your equipment. You've got reports to write. At some point you hope to grab a sandwich real quick, but that's a lot of calls for service in a 10-hour shift. And so that's not ideal.
I figured that one out all by myself. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Police Chief Steve Watson. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Steve, the concept of what, I guess, the community expectations are from police. I'm sure you're probably, on your fifth chapter in your book already?
I wish I'd been keeping better
notes. Some of the weird things and the expectations are there things that we are, as citizens, becoming accustomed to expecting cops to handle that really aren't part of your jurisdiction, but we've been so trained to call 911 about a hangnail that you guys get, or fire, gets the calls for medical aid?
That's absolutely true. I do think more and more people are starting to realize they've overextended the police even before the summer civil unrest and topics coming forward. Part of that is, you know, law enforcement needs to do a better job of messaging, you know, what it is we do, what we should be doing, we shouldn't be doing, and all of that. But, I mean, yes, again, we have people that call us to parent their kids. Johnny won't get up. Johnny's 9. Johnny won't get out of bed and go to school. So let's call an officer there to threaten and intimidate him. You know, it's kind of the attitude you get from the parent. No, we're not going to do that.
Well, and obviously that's worked really well up to this point, too, if he's still in bed.
Yeah.
You're right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, and the list could go on and on. There are some mental health related calls that really don't need an officer, though, again, because we're 24/7 first responders and most mental health services don't work 24/7.
That's why I was wondering if mental health could be, if you got fire, cop, and mental health, those that are mental health get shunted off over there, and those folks have a 24/7 response.
Again, you have to have the infrastructure, the resources. The 24/7 nature is going to be very challenging, but start somewhere, you know, during the peak hours.
Okay, daytime.
Right.
Fine, okay.
Yeah, I believe there's room across this country, and even including here locally, for sure, to do better in that area. If we could get the commitment of resources and funding, you know, because the local governments, the county, the city is not going to have that funding. We can do a little bit, like we're doing with the Uplift Eureka program through Measure Z support and
But
and
mental health is state-funded and county supported, right? I mean, that wouldn't be just the Eureka jurisdiction. That would be...
Eureka doesn't get any funding for mental health. So the funding goes to the counties and the county programs, and they'll tell you there's not enough. And so it's going to take a high level of support, you know, beyond local jurisdictions at the state and federal level to try to turn that ship around. And there's certainly a need. Mental health issues just seem to be exponentially increasing. And this pandemic and the stress that's taking place with the recession and everything else going on, and even the civil unrest going beyond just the law enforcement issue, but just the election, the hatred, the extremism that's taking
place. Yeah, the vitriolic nature.
Yeah, I mean, people are stressed out, and I think more people are self-medicating, and certainly I think it's triggering some.
What does self-medicating mean?
Using drugs, alcohol.
Okay, yeah.
Prescription meds. Or abusing, I should say, not disusing.
Okay. That seems to be like one of those broad-based stroked things that popped up in the last 25 years.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, yeah. This is a slightly different topic, but there's been a real move the last few years to destigmatize things like homelessness, and so it's persons experiencing homeless versus
obfuscate,
calling somebody.
I think is the word we're talking about.
What's that?
Obfuscate.
Yeah.
Right. And oh. Instead of saying what it is, you don't want to hurt anybody's
right
feelings.
Addict is not the
say anything.
Addict is not the preferred term now. It's I think substance use disorder or something like that. I'm not sure what the latest is, but you know, again, to try to recognize that the human being that's involved, and you know, again, not kind of label people into certain, like defines them because they have a problem with heroin, not allowing that to fully define them. And so you change some of this terminology in, at least in those circles where
but
people.
But it means the same thing. I mean, we kind of saw that with food stamps. I don't even know what it's called anymore, but you know, it went through four or five different relabels, and every time it's relabeled, it carries the same emotional punch. You know, after 3 months and everybody figures out what it means, and that used to be, now it's, you're right back in the same boat again. So, the lack of clarity, I guess, in some of the communication styles and terminology is frustrating for a lot of us that are outside that jargon silo, if you will. I don't know. Would you be in favor of supporting something, and I don't know how it would be done, but the expansion of Semper Vivens? I mean, would that be?
Oh, absolutely. If we can we could increase the capacity and level of care that our mental health facility, can bring. I mean, I think everyone would agree that would be a good thing. We need more space. We need more resources for sure. And we're very fortunate we even have a mental health facility and emergency mental health services here in the county. There's many areas that don't have that at all.
That hasn't expanded, or their capacity is the same as it was decades ago, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure on the exact timeline, but it doesn't sound like it's, to my recollection, significantly expanded. And I know that they're frequently at a situation where they don't have enough room.
It would seem like that would be an opportunity to help the folks that need the help, and also be able to have, to avoid you guys and gals having to see the same individuals for the same purposes multiple times in a week or in a couple of days or even in an afternoon.
Right. Certainly space is one component, but then also the decisions that are made there, as well as who should be is safe to be back out on the streets versus who's not. Is this primarily a drug issue or is it a mental health issue? When you have co-occurring issues taking place, how do you decide what's the precipitating factor here? That's one of those kind of age-old where we don't always agree.
Well, I would suggest that whichever side you fall on, it's better for them to be in that kind of a setting than out wandering in the streets.
I don't think you'd find any cops disagreeing with you, because sometimes we're right back dealing with the same person, same issue, somewhere else in town, and it can be very frustrating because,
Well, they're unsafe.
Do they go to the jail? Do they go to the mental health facility? What do we do?
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:40.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We are back talking shop this morning with Steve Watson. What, has it been that tough a show?
It's actually a little chilly in here, huh?
I know. We don't want people hanging around too long.
Well, you'd be better off turning the heat way up.
Oh, yeah.
That'd get me out of here quicker.
Oh, then I'd never come in. Cold. And then you got the mold issue. Yeah, it doesn't work. So what's on your plate for October? I know we're not really kind of sort of recognizing Halloween this year, which, if there was to be a day, a Saturday night has got to be a major relief for you guys, but there's still going to be some goofiness going on.
Yeah, that's inevitable, I think, on Halloween. I do hope that people are responsible during that period, and we are in the middle of a pandemic, and that is a real thing, and You know, you always worry about kids out at night anyways. This is the cop in us, but with the traffic and all of that. Fortunately, we don't have usually that many issues or accidents involving children on Halloween. But
yeah,
right now, COVID's kind of like the issue. Last year, we were handing out, we had officers hand out candy. I don't think we're going to be able to do that this year because of the COVID safety precautions.
I heard a stat, I think it was yesterday, one of the morning shows we have. 85% of American adults are going to be buying costumes, but not going to parties.
What do you say, home and binge watch Netflix while they're wearing their Batman costume?
And then you
costume?
Know, be outside and hand the, you know, be ready, you know, with the gloves and stuff to hand candy to the kids that might be coming by. But it I think it's the number one holiday for adults. You know, that isn't like Easter or Christmas. It's just. Yeah, I don't know. If
I know more than a few, it's their favorite holiday.
Yeah, yeah. It just, you know, to me, it was always opportunity to cast a wide net for candy. I didn't go beyond that.
And you know it must be a big seller because every year you get a couple big boxes, stores taken over, even here right. in town, that's like wall-to-wall Halloween costumes,
yeah.
you know, in addition to what all the other stores are already selling. So
you'd think local live theater would be far more active. Because of this pent-up demand. I mean, it just, it's really kind of interesting. It is a, I guess, as a social commentary. And then you guys probably get to see some of that stuff for the next couple of days also.
We have some regular folks that are wearing costumes about every day
yeah.
out there.
Yeah, and then with the election, what, 3 days later, 4 days later? I mean, it kind of, it's teed up for an interesting weekend for you.
You know, that is not lost on us, that November 3rd, I think that's that Tuesday, Election Day, with the level of emotions that this country has right now, and especially the presidential election, certainly not, it's not the only one. I mean, you know, you hope for the best, and there's certainly going to be...
Well, it's weird getting the ballot in the mail, and I think in Eureka, I think Fortuna has two drop-offs. You got two drop-off places. That's it. So if you're not going to mail it, you know, if you don't feel comfortable mailing it, and I would suspect you guys are recommending also don't hand it to somebody to turn in for you.
Yeah, can you take this and drop it off?
Yeah,
for me?
Yeah. It's just going to be interesting this time around. So.
And we may not know the results of the election for weeks.
Years, who knows? Thanks for coming by, Steve. It's your turn to say okay.
Okay.
All right. See everybody tomorrow.